come up here and introduce our speaker for this evening.
Hi, my name's David.
Hi, David.
I get to be your speaker bookie for this meeting. It is my pleasure to introduce our speaker, all the way from Anaheim, Gary G.
Hi, I'm Gary.
Gary.
Thank you, David, for asking me. And thanks, truck, for driving. That was the hard part coming up here. And keeping me calm. I really appreciate it. This too is also my November is my birthday month, so if I go too long on the crazy part, it's just being sentimental. I got here because of a relationship with an alcoholic. I qualified long before I got here. When I was 20, I was going out with this girl, and she told me, she says, "Guys are always trying to outdrink me, and they can't." Yeah. That was about red flag number 45 of her. And I continued to ignore it for about another 40, 50, 150 more. So I got here. I met this girl, and that's how all my crazy stories start. And I don't know, I was around 30, 31 or so, and I was jogging. My life, at that time, my life consisted of, I would go to work, I would come home, take a nap, go jogging, and it was that. Life was pretty boring, and I was really looking for excitement, but I didn't want the kind of excitement that I ended up getting. And like I said, there she was in the jacuzzi after I got done working out, and she was passed out drunk. That night, the next night, the night after that, and she was the same age as me, but and it wasn't love at first sight. It wasn't she needs me. That would come later, but immediately I was in denial about her drinking, and I'm thinking she's drinking like this because she had just moved from Ohio, and that's why. I guess she had lived a sheltered life and just never learned how to drink. Later on, I learned it wasn't. And, you know, in fact, we were getting kicked out of a bar one night, and she was getting all mad at him. And her comeback was, "I've been kicked out of better places than this. I've been kicked out of the Four Seasons in Chicago." And So like I said, it wasn't love at first sight, and I knew she had problems, and the red flags were all there, and like I said, I'd seen lots of them, and every single girl I'd been attracted to, but I ignored those. And so what I did is I waited till she was getting transferred to Northridge, and then kind of made my move, figuring, okay, I won't see her anymore, and that was that. And she got transferred up to Northridge. We kind of spent some weekends together. And then she got transferred down to San Diego, but before she got settled anywhere, she called me and said, you know, she was living at the YWCA in San Diego and would get back to me when she got settled. And I didn't hear anything from her for several months. And I went back to my parents live in Colorado. I went back for Christmas, and my sister was there, and this was one of those seeds were planted. My sister said to me, she looked at me, she goes, "What's wrong with us?" Meaning me, her, and my brother. She's 8 years older than me. My brother's 6 years older. And other than a very short, she got married when she was about 21 or 2, and it lasted for maybe 6 months, to a guy whose best friend was the Coors distributor. Go to think of it. And like I said, that was like the first thought, maybe there's something wrong. Because up till then, I thought we were the perfect family. And so I get back, and me and, let's just call her Sherry, because that's what her name is. she called me up and said, let's get together. So we get together, and we meet somewhere, and then go down to, she had settled in North San Diego County, and she goes, "Yeah, come on now, and And you get to meet my son. I go, your son? And she goes, oh, yeah, I told you about that. I had a teenage son. No, I think I'd have remembered that. So communication's never been a strong suit with me. And so I start up the relationship again. And again, it's nothing, deep or love or anything like that. And somewhere around that point, what I was I knew she was having, as an AA speaker eloquently says, her life was a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings. And she was going through all of this chaos, and I'm going along through it with her. And I didn't want to get involved with it. So what I was kind of hoping for was that she would find another guy, or she would get her life together so I could then leave. And, because I didn't want to feel guilty about dumping her while she's down. And then, so what we would do is 70 miles apart we lived, and we would meet halfway. And we met at this kind of romantic place in Laguna Beach called Las Brisas. And it was in the middle of the week, and she was just bombed out drunk. And what happened, it scared me, because she's causing a scene in there, and then I realized that she was drunk. And so I get her, try to sober up, and then she's walking around in the ocean, and this is like 9-10 o'clock at night, and I'm trying to sober her up. And like I said, that night just scared me, seeing her. I'd seen her way out of control before, but that scared me, that she had driven there and had to drive back. And so I kind of put the brakes on, and then we just started dating for a while. And during that... it seemed normal to me. So we would just meet for a movie or whatever, and we did that, and gave her a kiss goodnight and drove home, and all of a sudden, oh my God, feelings all over. It was, and what I realized, I'd fallen in love. And she had said the same thing, and like I said, we were in our early 30s, and it was the first time for me. I'd been in tons of obsessions and lust and everything like that I thought was love, but this was different. And now I'm seeing, okay, she's hurt. She needs me. She needs my help. She needs my stability. And somewhere along that line, I crossed that invisible line of caring for someone to wanting to run her life. And how I did that, like I said, it was a long distance relationship, so we called her every day. And I'm passive aggressive, so the way I do it is I say, I think it'd be a good idea if, you get more hours at work. You might want to see if you can get a job over here. You take your car in there. If I were you, and all of my senses were like that, and whatever life I had before then was gone. Now it was just, it was her. If you'd ask me, Gary, how you doing? I'd say, oh, okay, Sherry was able to get into class. Or Gary, how you doing? Oh, okay, yeah, she got this job. Never how I was doing. All of my friends, I just kind of put them aside. They'd ask, you want to go to the movies? You want to go golfing? Oh, no, I have to take Sherry. I got to do this. And what happened was, again, another night, another embarrassing scene in a restaurant, and we're coming home, and I look at her, and she's got the saddest look on her face, and we get in the parking lot at home, and she says, and she tries to break up with me, and what the hell? And she says, I don't want to see this bring you down. And what she meant was, now I know, was alcoholism. And I looking back now, I was extremely offended. I mean, how dare she think so? My lack of character, my strength. And I'm the Rock of Gibraltar, damn it! And so I talked her out of it, and we went to a dinner dance for New Year's Eve in San Diego, and I had this brilliant idea. I'm going to drink her drinks so she doesn't drink them. And now, mind you, I knew I can drink either beer, I can drink wine, I can drink mixed drinks. I can't mix any of them. So what I was doing that, and I even drank champagne, which I couldn't stand. And so I got drunk, and cunning, baffling, powerful, and like I said, so I ended, that was a miserable night. And so then in January, another restaurant, another place where we'd had a good time, another embarrassing scene. And it wasn't really embarrassing. I took it on as embarrassing. Mind you, this is 60, 70 miles from where I live. I don't know any of these people, but she's causing a scene, so it's me. I don't know if you've ever seen Godfather 2 in the beginning when Fredo's wife is causing a scene on the dance floor, and Michael has to get one of the goons to go get Fredo's. You know, I didn't want to be Fredo. and I'm Fredo. So we get back, and again she tries to break up with me. And by this time I'm about worn out. I'm just worn out. But I learned that alcoholics are like slot machines. They pay off often enough just to keep you coming back. And what she said was that she'd been in and out of AA, and asked me if I wanted to go to a speaker with her, meeting with her the next night. Oh, okay. All right. So we went to the speaker meeting in Carlsbad on Sunday night, and I was really nervous and apprehensive. I thought all these AAs are going to circle me and say, "You're in denial." Never happened. And this lady got up and spoke. And afterwards, Sherry asked me, she goes, "Well, what'd you think?" And I go, "Oh my God, I couldn't believe what this lady was saying. Where I come, you don't say those kind of things or do any of that." And I was just amazed. And what I learned was she was just sharing what she was like, what happened, what she's like now. Nothing real fancy. But like I said, I was just, oh my God, you know, the language of the heart. And so I looked forward to those Sunday nights, and we went for quite a while. And like I said, I really looked forward to that, and loved hearing the speakers. And at some point, I wished I was an alcoholic. I wanted what they had. Now, I'm sure somewhere along the line they mentioned Al-Anon, but I was not ready. But what I did hear was they all kept saying the same thing. And they said the key to sobriety and happiness. If you want happiness in life, what you do is you go to meetings, take commitments, get a sponsor, and work the steps. Well, I heard it really clear, but I guess she didn't. So I would have to remind her, hey, you know, She's in your field. She'd be a good sponsor. Hey, you do that too. You know, the secretary guy would always, every meeting at the start, say, "Anyone who'd like a commitment, come up and see me." So at the end of the meeting, I go rush up to the thing, and I figure she's in tow. And she's not. She's bolted out the door. And the other thing is, she never identified when she was less than 30 days sober. And they would say, "Anyone have 30 days or sober, less than..." And she would just be sitting there, and "You were drunk 2 weeks ago." Funny thing is, I took her son to an Al-Anon meeting, and they asked, "Is anybody here new?" And he's sitting next to me, and he didn't raise his hand, so I guess it's in the genes. So how I got into Al-Anon is I went insane. I was terrified of the relapse. I knew what she was supposed to be doing, and she wasn't doing. And I learned what alcoholism really is. It says if left untreated can result in insanity or death, and I believed it. And you know, if you're around here long enough, you'll see that's true. And so on one day on a Saturday, I go down and I called her before, and she was working at a place that she couldn't stand working at. And I talked to her, and during the day, and she had one of those "I'm pissed off, I'm going to get drunk" tones of voice. And so when I don't know, she was supposed to get off work at 9 or 10 o'clock, but when that came and you know she wasn't home, I started going insane. Now, mind you, she never got off work on time. But what I did is I just started projecting, and when I project, I don't project positive. "Oh, she's just being thorough at work." I start thinking she's going to get drunk, and then all of a sudden I think, "Oh crap! She's going to get drunk. She's going to quit her job," and so then I thought, "Well, what am I going to have to do?" And she's going to go to jail. I'm going to have to make arrangements for her son to go back to Ohio. And oh crap! I don't have enough money. I'm going to have to put her stuff into storage, and And so 9:15 come, 20, whatever, and I'm staring out the window. I'm waiting for the car to come. It's not there. Okay, maybe I count. Okay, maybe I count to 30. 30, stood to look out the window. It's still not there. Well, shit, maybe it was 20, whatever. And so I'm just getting nuttier and nuttier. And so finally she comes home, and truth was, she didn't get drunk. She just worked late or stopped off somewhere. And she comes in, and I go, "Where were you?" And my eyes are bugging out, and you know, and my hair always all over the place. And she looks at me like, I was at work. And, you know, and that was not the first time I had ever projected or counted or did any of that. But before that time, I'd always at least had the power to be able to gather myself in composure. When I saw the car pulling up, sit down on the couch, take a deep breath, and, you know, and then when she would walk in, I would say, "Oh, hi, I didn't hear you come in." Because I don't want her to know how nutty I am. And normally, I'd be able to get over that. And we had these ups and downs and things like that, and normally there'd be a relief after something like that, but I was tense all week, and sure enough, on Thursday, I must have called 100 times, never got a hold of her, got a hold of her on Friday, and sure enough, she had gotten the DUI, spent the night in jail, and I said, I don't know what to do. And what's funny, I called up my best friend, went over to his house, and then on Saturday morning, I called her. And I just said, I can't take it anymore. It's killing me. And I just had, I had a complete mental and emotional breakdown. I could not stop crying. I thought the world was over. I thought that I would never see her again. She would just go into some alcohol thing and die. And I'd failed. And what she did is she told me, she goes, "Go to an Al-Anon meeting." Except she says Al-Anon. And I couldn't find it in the phone book under A-L-I-N. And like I said, I called, and somebody at the office said, "Yeah, there's a, I asked for a speaker meeting because I sure as hell didn't want to share, and there weren't any. And they told me of a meeting in Anaheim Hills, and I went to it. And I went in there, and first I could get in, and you know, it's a real festive group like this and everything, and nice. And I sit down, and look around. The guy says, "So what do you do here?" He says, "Oh, well, we talk about our drinking, how it affected our lives." I said, "Is this an AA meeting?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, I'm here for Al-Anon." He goes, "Oh, it's down the hall." So I went from this real vibrant thing, and it's me and one lady, you know. and she's setting it up, and she looked at me, and a few other people did show up, and she just they must have just said, "This guy is a real wreck." I don't know if they did, but they chose detachment as a topic. And there was a guy there at my meeting. He was my first Al-Anon resentment, because he was just sitting there. My life is over. I just don't know. I'm so nervous, and my gut was just numb. What I learned was that's what you call a God hole, that illusion of the perfect relation. It was gone, and I was empty, and I just wanted this guy. Okay, everything's going to be perfect. Here's what, and you know, there's no simple answer, but what they did tell me was that you know, that, yeah, there's a men's stag group also on Thursday. This is in Garden Grove. Men have sometimes have a better time relating to other men. You want to go there, and so I went to that meeting the next week, and mind you, I was incapable of even the simplest thoughts. We were supposed to go back to Colorado for Thanksgiving, and we had canceled it. And I was just I spent the whole week wondering, what am I going to tell my parents? Why? And I couldn't even think of that. So I couldn't wait to go back to this other meeting another time and ask a guy, what do I say? And he says, "You don't need to tell them why." But that's where I was at that point. Just I couldn't put together a simple thought. And like I said, I had a bunch of resentments at that meeting too. Didn't really like anybody. Now mind you, I know the key to happiness. What do? You go to meetings, you take amendments, get sponsored, work the steps. No, that's for you people. And I was beat, but I wasn't all the way down. And I know because I still had my pride. And how I know that was I was terrified that somebody from my high school would be there. Now, mind you, I was 15 years removed from high school. And that's all right if you're here, especially you. But not me. Don't you know who I am? I'm special. So they would announce sponsorship and explain, and I thought, how freaking pathetic, a grown man needing a sponsor. Now, mind you, I saw these AA guys, and they all talked about this relationship with a sponsor. And, wow, that's really, really neat. That's neat for them. But, oh, my God, no, we're pathetic. That's how I think. And so we eventually did get back together. Her birthday and Thanksgiving coincided, and we got back together. But, you know, I'm not going to let any, like I said, after that breakdown, I'm not going to let anybody in. And things eventually got back to what I would call normal for us. I would go to that Thursday meeting. I didn't like the people, so I would show up at 8:30. The meeting starts at 8, but I didn't like the announcements or readings, and I didn't want to talk to anybody. So I'd show up at 8:30 and then bolt out at 9:30. But I like the thing. And then I made the profound statement was, oh, I can't work these steps. My life's not unmanageable. And then I wandered into a small men's meeting on Tuesday night in Placentia. And it was me and Truck and about four or five other people. And in a speaker meeting, I could hide. And in the big men's meeting, I could hide. But in this meeting, you had to share. And then all of a sudden I would share what I'm doing. Oh yeah, I called her and then I called her again and then I checked this for her and all of a sudden I'm hearing myself and oh my God, I'm nuts. You know? Because normally what I would do is after the other meeting, I'd drive home and I'd share in the car to myself. And I was just. I was eloquent. I had great insight. So, like I said, all of a sudden, so this is another one of those things. Ooh, maybe I'm not as well off, as adjusted as I thought. So, I had to hit a bottom in Al-Anon, and to sum it up, I didn't know where she was. I called her. Probably 100 times throughout the day. Yes, I know it's obsessive compulsive. This was before cell phones. And finally, I get home and I call her and I get a hold of her. And she was working in downtown San Diego. And I was going to suggest to her because she worked a graveyard shift. Why don't you go to your friend Ruby's house after work? And so I get a hold of her. Where were you all day? She goes, I went to Ruby's. And I just lost it. I went into a rage. I think that Tuesday meeting because sharing, all of a sudden, I'm a stuffer. Things just started coming out. And I basically went into a rage where I wanted to take it out on somebody or anything. And my outlet at that time had been jogging. I used to run about 4 or 5 miles a night. It's a great catharsis. And the only thing is I'd sprained my Achilles tendon. And so I couldn't run, but I didn't care. So I went out running that night. And I'm in pain, and I don't care, but I'm just in full rage, and I want to take it out on somebody. And I'm praying that I run into gangsters or guys with a boombox car, and I'm going to yank them out of the car, and I'm just going to start beating the crap out of them. And so I'm running, and no gangsters or anything. And then all of a sudden, I've been afraid of dogs, and I've been bit by dogs a couple times. And I used to run by this house, and these people had a dog chained up in the front yard. And it used to scare me when I would run by it, and I had to run out into a major street to avoid it. So this night I'm thinking, I'm gonna get him. Man bites the dog, you know. But I'm gonna kill the dog. And so I go running up the street, and the dog's not there. So that night scared the crap out of me, as I saw how completely insane I could get, and I didn't want to go to jail, And that's when I threw up my hands, okay, I need help. I'll get a sponsor. And just to give you a visual idea, I'd been eyeing this guy for a long time, and I asked a guy named Sick Rick to be my sponsor. And he's called Sick Rick not because some, you know, like someone 6'7", you call him shorty, it's because he's sick. And he when I asked him, he looked me up and down and just stood there silent. And thinking, oh shit, you know, I don't want this. And eventually he did say yes. So just that's how nutty I was. And he saved my life. What he did was a lot of things, but one, he introduced me to the fellowship. I didn't like other people. I didn't like the guys. I didn't like that. But with him, you know, all of a sudden I felt comfortable, and we helped somebody move. And I helped my sister did about 20 geographics, and I moved her every time, hated moving. And we helped somebody move, and afterwards we're having pizza, and I had gut-wrenching laughs, and that was, oh my God. Okay, now I get it. The other thing is, you got me started on the steps, and I'm gonna kind of fast forward to he eventually moved, but before he moved, he took me to my first convention with the Orange County AA Al-Anon convention. I saw a guy there who I knew was gonna ask to be my sponsor because his wife was there, and he and his wife were getting together, and they loved each other, and I wanted that. You know, like I said, my relationship. By the way, she eventually did get sober, and you know that wasn't my answer. But like I said, there was a lot of headbutting, and so I got this other sponsor, and just went through the steps. On the fifth step with him, I did a autobiography, and I went through every single year of my life and every obsession of all of these girls, and I discovered my patheticism. I really thought I was one of the cool kids in school, and I wasn't. But I was leery of telling this guy, but I knew I had to do it. And he was the son of a professor from a prestigious Eastern university. In reality, I'm the son of a plumber from Detroit. And so I'm telling him all of these pathetic stories and this. And for the first time, letting another person really say, this is who I really am. And what he did was where I got that first spiritual awakening, he shared almost identical stories, but a lot of identical feelings. And I realized someone who looked so much different on the outside was identical to me underneath, beyond the facade. And so, I mean, I was flying after that. And went through the sixth and seventh step, thought the sixth was a kind of a, this is the higher version of the third, hey, I did it. And the seventh, and before that, he kind of reined me in, and he said, write down every single defect you have that you identify, and then write the opposite and try to do that. Okay, yeah, I did it. And went and I did, I like the AA seventh step prayer. I did it up where we do a retreat. I thought the skies would open. It did, nothing happened. And then went on my amends and stuff like that. I'll just share share amends with Sherry. I had to make amends for how I treated her. I talked down to her. I belittled her. I assumed this high and mighty mode. And she took my crap because, frankly, she felt horrible about herself. So I made amends with that. And then also, you know, I was a bottle hunter. I discovered wine that she got from Pick and Save, of all places, you know, hiding in the hamper. And I confronted her on it. I don't know what I said, but I found the wine. To this day, I mean, she would always have like her big book and all of this stuff, papers all out, and trust that, you know, I wouldn't ever go through any of that. And then I hit a hard block in Al-Anon, and quit program because I think what it was I wanted an 11th step. I thought it said thought through prayer and meditation to get what I want, and I wanted a house. And I envisioned us. We went and saw this house, and I swear I envisioned, oh my God, this is perfect. There was a pool, and I thought we can play Fat Man in the Boat. Where what that is guys like me and some other, we get on a raft and the Alateens try to tip you over and stuff like and we didn't get the house or anything like that, so and, screw God, you know, God, they're just not there. Now, I trusted the process, but I just didn't think there isn't a God. And I would maybe mumble the prayers, and this lasted about 4 or 5 years. And then I was on the service board. That was the thing. At least I kept quitting program, but I kept showing up for my commitments. I did my panel, and I was on the service board. And I get a call from Kaiser Hospital, and they say, so I'm thinking, oh, it's a health fair because I'm doing public information. Instead, they say, yeah, your brother's here, and you know, and he's been talk suicidal things, and we're not going to release him alone. Shit. So I go and I pick up my brother. At first, I call my sponsor, and it was on a Friday, and I spent the weekend with my brother. And well, what do I do? I don't know what to do. So I got on my knees, and it was that real hard prayer. God help me. I don't know what to do. God help him. And over a series of bunch of strange coincidences happened that aren't coincidences over a series of several months. One was, like I said, I was on the service board, and this guy was putting on a health fair at a high school in South Orange County, and he wanted Alan on there. And it was on a Wednesday or something, and I get this call on Monday. Excuse me. I didn't have anything planned, but I distinctly remember I don't want to be inconvenienced. So I told him, I said, well, you know, I can't make it, but if you can give us more time next time, we can make arrangements to have Alan on there. Yeah, but we never talk. We're just going each other's voicemails. He goes, and he's persistent. I mean, it would really be important if Alan's there. So I call him back and tell him how, well, if you want the literature where I work, you can pick it up. And so eventually we finally touch base, and he tells me where the high school is, and he says, that's Aliso Viejo High School. And all of a sudden, my jaw dropped, because one of the guys in my men's group lived in Aliso Viejo, and his 14 or 15-year-old stepson had just died that week from an overdose. And I asked this guy, I said, did someone just die from there? And he says, yeah, well, a kid who'd been in their program. Oh shit! All right, I gotta be there. And I said, you know, I know his stepfather goes to my men's group. Do you want me to have him come talk? And he said, yeah. And so, I truly believe I was supposed to be there that night. And maybe he was, or maybe there was people in the audience. But it was just one of those moments where I just saw what the program was. This guy gets up and he just says, you know what I learned? You know, we. Give by giving back, and he just shared his story. It was all horrible, but how Al-Anons were there for him, A's were there for his wife, and like I said, I just really moved after. Like I said, that was one of a whole series of things, and then I heard a speaker say on the seventh step. He says, you know, when you give that seventh step, God just doesn't. You get actions. Which you can then work through those defects of character. And that's when I look back on what had happened, was it? And I realized, well, maybe God was there all along. It was what I do a juvenile hall panel, and I don't like kids. I don't like bad kids. I've been doing it for 15 years. I very rarely ever like going there. But I realize when I leave, I feel good. And I wonder why. And what it is, you know, after a while, I just share with them what I was, especially I was like a teenager, and I share my pathetic stories or things like that. And I realize when I leave that, wait a second, those kids, if they're anything like me, as soon as I leave, they're saying, oh my God, this guy's all, he's pathetic. What a moron. What a loser. And I don't care. That was, my whole life has always been, what are people going to think of me? Well, what do they think? And my whole life was run by that. And it's the other thing. Like I said, this is who I really am, not the facade I try to put on. And then I gotta share the Alifairy story. And I was real desperate. Like I said, after my thing with the dog and stuff like that, I would do anything. I'll volunteer for service. I'll do anything. And my friend Truck here comes up to me and says, Gary, how'd you like to be in a skit at the Orange County Convention? Sure, Truck, yeah, I'll do it. You're going to be the Owl Fairy. Oh, my God. Now, mind you, now I'm an attention seeker, and I'm a ham, but I've always been afraid to do all of that, because what if I look bad? So I think, oh, my, just total terror came over me. I don't know why I'm going to be able to learn all these lines, and he wrote this long-ass script. And, oh, shit, I'm going to look like a fool in a tutu. And so we do it. And I don't die. And because I was in that, the lady who was chairing the holiday alathon thought I was a thespian, comes up and, Gary, I want you to do the entertainment for the alathon. I thought, oh, shit. It, again, just the defects of character were right there. Pride? Oh, no, I'm gonna make a fool of myself. I'm not going to be able to do it. And just total terror and fear. And so I'm sitting in the meeting, and I can't think of anything. Then all of a sudden, the thought pops into my head. God must have gotten through that cloud. And if I realized, a friend of mine did a perfect impersonation of Christopher Walken. This watch was your father's watch. And I thought, oh my God, that would be hilarious, celebrity impersonators doing Al-Anon stories. So I decide, okay, I didn't say it, time to get back, because I thought Truck said that he always wanted to perform. And so I said, Truck, how'd you like to do it? And he came up, and he was Abe Lincoln. 67 years ago, I married an alcoholic. David here was Al P, and another, the godfather, the younger godfather from New York. And while we were, Truck's skit was The Godfather Goes to Al-Anon. And during rehearsals, I realized I could do the godfather voice. So I got up and I was Don Corleone, by my boy Sonny. May he rest in peace. And then the 12 steps. We also had Darth Vader got control issues like to rule the universe. And Rocky Balboa, my brother-in-law, Paulie, drinks too much. And so I did that. And then some years later, I'm the program chair for the Alathon, which, by the way, Jack is speaking at in a few weeks. Come on and join us. I gave David flyers. It's in Orange County. And so I'm program chair, and I think, oh, I get to choose to do the skit or entertainment. And I decide, oh, I'm going to do it myself. And what do I do? I'm going to write a script. And I've been called being sappy because my favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. And so I write a skit of It's a Wonderful Alifairy Life. And of course, I'm not going to do the Alifairy again, so I get somebody else to do it. And we have these rehearsals, and we couldn't even get through the rehearsals without... I knew it was going to be a bomb, because we couldn't even get the lines right at rehearsal. And we did it. And then afterwards, I realized how far I'd come. One of the guys in my Tuesday men's meeting had said, he grew up in alcoholism, and he said, whenever somebody asks me something, my first answer is no. And I realized that was me. My boss would ask me, Gary, can you get this done by 4:00? And I would say to him, no. And then I'd look at it, oh, yeah, I can. Somewhere, life, I just can't do stuff. And then that's where I realized I went from, like I said, oh, I can't do that. Truck wrote this. I could get up in front of people. I could make a fool of myself. I could do all of those things. And so little by little, I realized, God was there all along. It just was working on me in ways I didn't imagine. Like I said, I wanted the perfect relationship. I wanted the perfect house, the perfect job. I wanted the material things, and that wasn't coming. But what was coming was a sense of calmness about myself, a sense of calmness about life and fun. Like I said, we're still together today. She's quite entertaining, but you know, her sobriety wasn't my happy. It wasn't made me whole, and so to this day, I still can, you know, still do these things. I do this. I'm asked. I don't like doing this because, you know, I look embarrassing, and like I said, I just want to thank you, and again, thanks for Truckford for driving up. You've been a real good friend throughout the years, and that's all I got. Thanks.